Deep Dive Cleantech. Dein Business, Investment und Technologietauchgang zum grüneren Wirtschaften von DWR Eco. Deinem Moderator David Wortmann. Ab geht's.
Louis Lark, hello, how are you? You're from Wind Capital.
Hey, hi David, how are you? I'm fine, thanks.
Great, you guys are in France, and maybe you can tell us very quickly, in one or two sentences, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, sure. So Wind is a European early stage VC with an investment thesis very much at the crossroads of what you could call deep tech and climate tech, so environmental impact.
All right. I mean, your name might be a little bit misleading, or maybe even not. You could explain us, because you are called Wind Capital. But as you just said, you're not just doing investments into wind technologies, but all over in climate tech, clean tech, green tech, right?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And actually, the story behind is quite funny. And it's just because all our partners, and especially our founding partners, Xavier and Thierry, they're fond of wind and kite surfing, and that's where the name comes from.
Well, that's pretty nice. I mean, wind and kite surfing. At the end of the day, wind energy is also solar energy, right? It's just the movement of different air temperatures in the air, which creates wind. So wind is what you guys are creating as well in the investment scene. Are you just focused on France, or you work across Europe?
No, actually, it's broader than that. We have a whole European focus. To date, most of the investment team is based here in Paris, where I'm calling from. But in fact, we do have venture partners locally all around Europe, and we are covering the whole space with some tiny exceptions. But yeah, we do have a European focus.
Okay, let's get first all the facts together. How big is your fund? How much have you been raising? How many funds you guys have?
Yeah, so the current vehicle we're deploying is 130 million. So with the investment deals I was mentioning just before, focusing on climate X deep tech, we invest in seed and series A rounds, always taking lead or co-lead positions. And there's this implies tickets from, let's say, 500K for seed or early seed projects to 5 million tickets for big series A. And one important thing to note is that more than half of our vehicle is dedicated to follow-ons, as we truly have the will and the ambition to fuel the growth of our success stories.
So this is your first fund, or you have already been raising for a couple of funds?
The story is particular, to the extent that actually Wind was born 15 years ago. It was basically the business angel investment vehicle from Xavier and Thierry, our founders, who are both entrepreneurs, created many startups together and exited very well. And as they became successful, they decided to invest together in a business angel activity. So per se, the vehicle we're currently deploying is first one structured as a standard investment fund, I would say. But Wind has been around for many years now, and Xavier and Thierry have been investing for more than 15 years together. So it's kind of in between, I would say.
Yeah, so you probably have been growing from a pretty strong bilateral business angel, very small network, to now a proper VC fund with this 130 million, yeah, you said. And when you describe the technologies you're investing in, how broad you go, where do you say this is not anymore your comfort zone? Where do you draw the line?
Well, we try to have a clever way of approaching the deals and startups we see and we meet. We're covering the whole space related to environmental impact. The real strong aspect is you have to bring a strong deep tech component to the table. But that being said, there are many different verticals. Of course, we cover energy, mobility, manufacturing industry, but some other topics that might be more niche, like new materials, water tech, depollution of the air, of course, carbon capture. So at the end of the day, it's quite broad, but the common factors are definitely the deep tech aspect and the strong environmental impact. Anything that that could bring climate resilience, actually.
How do you define deep tech?
Well, might not be the right one, but I'll give you ours. We are looking for a text with strong differentiating elements. We're not obviously looking for patents or IP or so, but most often it comes with it. We're really looking for disruptive technologies that can't really be replicated, that are protected, and that are really bringing something new to the world and the market. So for us investors, that's kind of our definition.
So it's more technology in terms of hardware than software and digital solutions.
It can be both, actually. Of course, when we think of deep tech, and especially deep tech dedicated to climate action, we think of hardware. But we are very much interested in software as well. We conducted one investment in, for example, in Soft, which is a green IT platform. They're doing super well. That's one of our portfolio companies we're most proud of, and it's exclusively software.
Yeah. And you are describing yourself not just a pure provider of money, of investment, but also somebody who's, you know, building and backed by entrepreneurs. You mentioned the two founders of Wind Capital who have been successful entrepreneurs themselves. How does this affect your DNA as an investor, and how do portfolio companies actually profit and benefit from this different DNA?
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, that's really a great question, and I think a differentiating element for us at Wind. Indeed, you mentioned that, and I said that before. Our two founders, Xavier and Thierry, they are entrepreneurs, created many startups together, and then they've been joined by other partners at our firms who are also entrepreneurs. So that's very much the first thing about us. As we take We tend to take a lead and colleague positions. We most often have board seats, and they're really bringing their experience, expertise, and network to the table and to the portfolio company, which I think is super helpful. That's the first thing. And the second one is that we can be called an entrepreneurial fund to the extent that in our LP base, so our LPs being the investors who put money in our current vehicle, we have more than 120 families and entrepreneurs. Most of them are friends of our partners. And it's quite a sizable network we can leverage, first to analyze the deals on our end, but also the portfolio companies can benefit from that because we always, you know, one touch point away from the right person in the right company. And that's a huge asset we're bringing on top of everything on the table.
Does this also affect the way how you're choosing the right investments? Maybe you can tell us a bit more how portfolios, companies actually come to you and how you find them or how they find you, and what does it make different in this decision-making process since you're entrepreneurially backed up?
Yeah, well, I guess the question is twofold. So first thing, if we do it chronologically, about sourcing element, we tend to have, you know, standard sourcing methods like going to events, scouting on networks, networking, sharing deal flow with other funds, and so on, trying to be active on the networks and be visible. But on top of that, something really particular about us is the fact that, yeah, because of in our LP base, we have so many entrepreneurs. Most of them are very well connected to the innovation world. And we tend to have many, many deals coming from our LP base. And that's definitely something we will leverage. And most of them are super highly qualified. It's only great opportunities. So I guess it answers the first part. And about the way we tend to analyze deal with our, let's say, entrepreneurial lenses, it's just that, you know, the investment team, we have the luck to have really seasoned persons and investors having experience, many different startup incubations, growth stages, and also exits. And so that's an asset for our portfolio companies to be guided and helped. But that's also an asset for us because they have they can take a step back and see easily the potential in the startups and in the founders, especially. So, yeah.
Right. I mean, for those of who don't know that, you're an Article 9 fund. What does Article 9 actually mean? What does it qualify you to be an Article 9 fund? And could you also unpack what that means in practical terms for you guys?
Yeah, so Article 9 refers to the SFDR reglementation and regulation under the EU law and fund classification. To put it simply, it's basically the greener a fund can be at the very moment. In our mandate and investment thesis, we can only focus on investing in startups where there is a strong positive environmental impact. So that's kind of the philosophy about this Article 9 stamp. But in fact, when we invest in a company, we, along the financial business plan, which is quite standard in venture capital, we also craft an impact business plan with impact KPIs that are going to be tracked over time in line with the company. So impact can be broad, can be water pollution reduction, can be CO2 captured or abated or less emitted, can take different form. We try to be clever and intelligent regarding that. And but they are quite strong, and they are quite a commitment for us, because actually half of our carried interests for us as investors, carried interest being basically the bonus performance we get for us, is linked to the achievement of these very impact KPIs. So we are very committed in having positive outcomes, and it relates in our methods, which is just a proof of a strong alignment of interests.
Right. And if you look at these startups you're investing in, you said early stage, this is your focus. What are you actually looking for? What's the main metric you would like them to successfully to achieve? What KPIs are important?
That's a hard one, actually. That's a hard one, to the extent that I'm not sure there is a surefire answer. It very much depends. I guess the common aspects, though, relate on the scalability of the technology. We are VC fund, so we want to invest in technologies and startups that can scale and become unicorns and be great success stories. But it's the exact same for impact. We are looking for financial and business success as much as impact success. And the common thing between both is that your technology can scale. And quite often it boils down to the unique economics of the technology. To give an example, for example, direct air capture, so carbon capture. We've been actively covering the field since months, mostly since years now. But we are really struggling to find a model where the unit economics make sense. And at Wynn, we have the true and strong conviction that, that's definitely something you need to scale and to have the success we want you to have.
Technology, the potential of growth, scalability, it's one thing, but one of the most important things is the team itself. What are you looking for in teams to make sure that these are the right people on board to scale these technologies?
Well, we are very much looking for complementarity. There are some people on Earth that are amazing, that can do business, they can manage the business side, develop the tech, develop the sales, be great HR managers, that can be everything at the same time. We like them and we support them. There are not many, and they still have 24 hours in a day. To answer, we're very much looking at the complementary aspect of the founding teams, trying to understand who brings what in the company, in the startups, how they interact, because they're, I would have said linked, but I think I could even say married with the startups. So that's the kind of thing we look at. And we're also very much interested in understanding where the tech and the idea comes from. As a deep tech fund, we tend to see that, many deals come out of labs or long R&D years and so on. It's not an obligation. We're not only looking for that, but you know, that's important for us to understand where it comes from, where it was born, and what context, and especially why.
Yes, and universities, technology labs, R&D programs, these are probably the right directions you're looking into. But in terms of topics and themes, where do you think are the most innovative investments are coming from these days? And what do you see in the foreseeable future as very promising?
Well, I want to mention many things. I think it changes at the same time a lot, and not so much from one month to the other, because the challenges, the macro challenges remain the same, but each week, each day, we see new tech emerging, and actually that's why my job is so great and why I like it so much. But in terms of tech at the moment, during the past few months, I think there was a huge trend around new materials, be it enzymes, engineering of new enzyme pathways, precision fermentation, also when it comes to polymers, new synthesis method, this kind of stuff. And actually, there's been a space we've been covering heavily, and we've been investing in, although not everything has been disclosed, so spoiler alert. This is definitely something. I would also mention industry and manufacturing. When it comes to a new generation of robots being programmed with the reinforcement learning in a supervised or non-supervised way, we see great headways. Also in the industry field, there is a sizable explosion related to additive manufacturing, consuming less materials, being more precise, and allowing to use biodegradable polymers, biosourced polymers, so being more open in terms of input and only coming from brown sources. So yeah, many different answers, but all equally exciting, I'd say.
So drivers are robotics, materials. What about AI, artificial intelligence? Is this how do you look at that?
Gigantic topic. The way we see it is that actually it's within everything. I mentioned new materials, I mentioned industry, but actually between the lines, I was also mentioning AI. In the new material space, we tend to see that most often the great startups, they both have a hardware edge related, for example, to the synthesis of polymers and materials, but also an AI feedback loop to engineer new formulas, new architectures, and so on. AI is the true enabler of these computation, of this in silico computation. When we talk about industry and manufacturing, I was mentioning the robots. The robots, they can be they can do great headways due to new algorithms and way to be programmed. So that's definitely within each field, and also for us as investors, we like to think that we are a kind of an augmented VC, as AI is part of our daily lives. We use that to screen opportunities, to accompany us during our investment analysis. And it's super helpful, and especially in sourcing and in the coverage. So revolutionary, definitely.
You are French-based, you're in Paris, you work European-wide. How do you see Europe's position these days globally in the cleantech space, compared to Asia and the Americas?
Good. I see Europe doing really good. I think I might be biased because I'm quite in love with Europe, but I'm really convinced we have amazing assets to leverage in Europe. First thing is the talent pools. We have amazing universities, many amazing companies, amazing innovation hubs. So that's really something I would even say unique. And when it comes to climate challenges and to environmental resilience, I think we have had this sensitivity ahead, and that definitely positions us well to address these very challenges. We tend to see that the startups we're developing are doing great on our home turf in Europe. I guess the next step is to make them really global and international. So that's another challenge. I think there are some great progress that can be made on the regulatory aspects and so on. But yeah, I'm really positive about the Europe's future, and especially when it comes to innovation.
I mean, since Europe is probably these days one of the lighthouses globally in terms of clean tech and climate tech, because the European Union is having still some good regulations in place. There is still an overall support of the climate objectives. And we see this different developments in the USA, for example, and Asia has their own developments. To what effect do you think this will also attract companies into Europe? Will we see more startups coming to Europe to try to make their first commercial way over here? And second part of the question is, and or do you see also other VCs and capital coming over from the US, for example, because they may not see that much of attraction anymore in the US, but they rather see this in Europe? Is this also something which could be a fair thesis?
Yeah, we are. That's a super relevant question. When it comes to the startups, I would say that at the very moment, and as we speak, might be a bit too soon, because we see great researchers, great entrepreneurs coming back or coming to Europe at the moment. So that's really talent immigration we see, which is great stuff. But when it comes to startups, I think we need to be patient and wait a bit to see the startups coming from these labs or these talents to emerge. And sorry, the second aspect of the question was related to...
to investors, yeah. To VCs. You see that also money is coming over to Europe, yeah. Which might be a competition to you guys, because they may also want to do investments into the same startups like you do.
Yeah, no, you could be right, but actually that's not the way we see it. We don't see it as competition. There is indeed more and more US investors interesting themselves in Europe and in European startups. We see it from a great perspective. One deal that we're working on right now will be co-led with... an American fund. They're bringing something really different to the table, that's very much expert of the field we're investing in. And yeah, that's only great collaboration and great sourcing. And we tend to cross our analysis together. And I was mentioning just before the international expansion of European startups. I think having an American investor on the cap table is definitely an amazing asset. And for young and ambitious European startups, yeah. It depends on the stage, though. But at a later stage, that's definitely something you want to have, I think.
So if you would advise... you know, climate and clean tech entrepreneurs, the current environment, what is it, what they should be preparing for? And what would be one of the key points to make sure they tick the box when pitching to you or pitching to somebody else, just to make sure that they raise the money they're expecting to raise?
Yeah, I guess the first thing is that you must expect to be challenged. You basically are going to be challenged on everything. So be prepared, be in good shape, and be patient. That's the first thing. Then I would say one of the most important thing, and especially when it comes to deep tech and climate tech, I think that's the unit economics. Many stuff boils down to the unit economics, and when you're try to do energy storage, to do carbon capture, to produce a commodity in an alternative way, basically most often you in or out of the market, and we tend to see in some spaces green premium, and that's definitely something positive and we support that. But for us investors, we try to stress your model to understand its resilience. And, when you're trading a commodity or a commoditized service, you have to be in the market. And we see many brilliant and amazing topics with brilliant techs and founders and people and ideas, but they just won't scale because of, they don't manage to reach the threshold to have positive unit economics. And that's definitely something you want to have, or at least have a plan to reach them when you approach VC and your fundraising.
What is the main thing they are usually underestimating entering the climate tech space? Because money is theoretically is there, right? Positively favorable regulation is there as well. They might have a good solution in place. There might even be a good team in terms of execution. But what is the main thing they are actually underestimating entering the climate tech sector?
The competitivity, I'd say. I wish that we had a great world in which only a sustainable innovation would be supported. For us as an impact fund, an Article 9 fund, that's only what we back and what we want to see growing. But at least worldwide, the competition is tough. And especially when you are investing in the field of energy, to give it more precise, we can speak of batteries. Batteries, it might be commoditized. If you manage to produce a green battery in Europe with unit economics out of the market, you might sell some with a green premia and sell box and so on, which is great. But at the end of the day, if you want to scale, become a unicorn and conquer the world, you'll have to beat other supply chains of batteries. And that's the struggle, I think.
Okay. I mean, on your side, what are the red flags you're looking for when the entrepreneurs are coming to your directions?
I think there are some I could mention. The first one would try to stay away from rocky equity stories. We tend to like when we understand how the firm was structured, how it consistently grew, and we don't like to see rocky cap tables or founders leaving the firm, because we're just VCs. Our job is to ask questions and to try to understand it the best. And if we see some things, of course, it raises a lot of interrogation. And most often, there are some things you don't want to discover that are behind. So that's one thing. And also, we again with our deep tech scope and lenses and interest, we want to see some a business perspective. Too often we talk to great, amazing scientists or researchers that are developing a thrilling solution, but it's this very solution, sometimes it's just looking for its problem, and that's what we try to run away from. We don't want solutions looking for the problem.
Right. Well, maybe before we end the conversation, just one last question is the one moonshot investment you actually hope to see within the next 3 to 5 years?
If you allow, I think I would say two. The first thing is direct air capture. I'd love to see a technology managing to scale carbon capture. So, carbon capture in the air, but also point source carbon capture. I think it will be a game changing from a mitigation perspective. And the second thing, it's more short term, is energy storage. I'd love to see a technology disrupting the existing ones, be it thermal, being electrical, but to see something that can just boost the flexibility of the grid, of our capabilities. And I think that's something we need, and we need that urgently, especially if we continue this shift to renewables.
Two great topics. Anything else you would like to mention, Luis, before we end the conversation?
No, just happy to have been on board. And shout out to investors and partners and especially entrepreneurs. If you feel like the topics we mentioned resonates with your goals, ambitions, and values, feel free to reach out. Always happy to share a coffee I'll have a chat.
Very good, Luis. Thank you very much from Wind Capital. Thank you so much for this great conversation. Let's definitely stay in touch. And I hope that you guys have a good decision process in place to create the next moonshot investment. Talk to you soon. Bye, Luis.
Many thanks, David. Bye.
Zeit zum Auftauchen. Wir hoffen, dir hat's gefallen. Wenn es so ist, würden wir uns sehr über eine positive Bewertung und ein Abo freuen. Und falls du noch tiefer ins Thema eintauchen möchtest oder Kontakt zu unseren GesprächspartnerInnen suchst, kannst du dich über www.dwr-eco.com ganz einfach bei uns melden. Dieser Podcast wird von DWR Eco produziert, deiner internationalen Cleantech-Beratung für Markt- und Geschäftsstrategien, Politik, PR und Kommunikation.